Hello and welcome to Unabashed Book Snobbery, the podcast where we gush about George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire and investigate its inarticulate adaptation, Game of Thrones.
This is where being a book snob is a good thing.
My name is Kylie, and here with me is Julia.
Hi, everyone.
The two of us write for thefandamentals.com for a fundamentally sound fandom analysis. You should check it out now that we are into 2018. We are bringing you the best news, reviews, and metas of geeky media. And by the best, I mean like a million different hot takes on why we actually liked The Last Jedi.
For the most part. Because it was good. Now, that's why we liked it.
Another hot take that we have that we're a bit known for is the take that Game of Thrones, you know, the water cooler show on television that's winning Emmys for best drama, is
poop.
Yes, not this year. But we think it's a little poop. We are unabashed book snobs. But at this point, it's not even really relevant to the books. It's just a terrible show, right?
Well, yeah. And this year was kind of the year that everybody realized that we're still not ready to admit it.
Which is weird because I still say season six was worse, but whatever.
Yes, season six was definitely worse.
So here's the thing. What Julia and I do, because we are so fascinated by the critical response and the audience response to Game of Thrones, that we have to break it down to understand it. So we have a tradition, this is now our third season that we're doing this of rewatching the latest season of Game of Thrones, going through plot line by plot line, and analyzing and discussing it so that we can really immerse ourselves in showrunner Benioff and Weiss's vision for whatever this is. This is our first retrospective for season seven, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this podcast is actually coming out after we've written about it already.
Yes, that's how we do it.
But because we have to figure out what we're going to write, which is no easy task, Julia and I talk through the plot lines and have a nice conversation about what the fuck we just watched. So Julia, what the fuck did we just watch? What is this plot line?
This is Winterhell. And, so this is probably going to be impossible next year. And this year it was challenging to actually break up the show into plot lines. And we're going to end up going with four, right?
Yeah. Season five was so neat. I really missed
that. Season five was, we had so many, there were so many retrospectives, but we were so full of like the zeal of the converted. It was like no work at all. It was awesome.
This plot line is literally just what happens in Winterhell. And by extension, there's a couple scenes with Arya and Bran before it that feed into it. But like, you know, even though Jon's in some Winterhell scenes and then leaves, his own plot line, and we're probably going to rediscuss a couple of these scenes with him, but his own plot line is going to be in the Dragonstone sort of set piece retrospective that includes the stupid mission beyond the wall. So this one, this is really, you know, I don't think it's spoiling too much to say this is Sansa's story, right? She at least seems to be the main actor with...
And she seems to be more or less consistent this year,
and
which is weird.
The antagonist seems to be Arya, but we'll get into that. She is pretty consistent. So
yeah. Well, she's Brittany the whole time.
She is Brittany. So here's the thing. Julia and I hate the conflation of our beloved book series, A Song of Ice and Fire, with Game of Thrones. So we have invented an immaculate series of nicknames to separate them from one another. So what fandom nicknames do we use in this? Which is actually not a ton, but...
No, well, last year we kind of developed the Sansa Stark construct because Sansa was so inconsistently written that she just kind of split off into all these personalities. And the one that survived it this year is Brittany Stark, who's a boss-ass individual.
She's just empowered and pretty modern, hence the name Brittany, which kind of came out of nowhere.
Very, very competent.
And she came out of nowhere. Just, yep.
Yeah.
She just exists.
But we like her.
We like her a lot. I really like Brittany.
Yeah.
Continue.
Yeah, and then we have Johnny Cardboard.
Oh, Johnny Cardboard. And again, Johnny Cardboard is going to be more discussed in his own plotline, but he's mm-hmm. just a little stupid and a little wooden as a character. So he's
no, he's not wooden. He's what happens after you like chop down the tree and then pulp it up and then make cardboard out of it.
Deadwood. What Deadboard is the ship name with him and yes. Cardboard. We also have, we call her Arya probably, but Arya Todd is her formal name. She's the, you know, demon assassin of the Starks. she shaves the faces of gentlemen who never thereafter were heard from again. And she's, exactly. She's got a lucrative pie shop. I guess she's technically Todd and Mrs. Lovett. But Arya Todd works for our purposes.
Yes.
There is also Brandbot 1000.
Yes, because something happens to Brandon Stark.
Brandbot cannot love. We don't have a ton of nicknames beyond like Winterhell, which is pretty obvious.
Batfinger, I guess.
Oh, Batfinger. Right. Okay, so this wasn't even ours. Back in season 4 or 5, some people on the Westeros.org forums started calling Littlefinger Batfinger because his voice sounded like Christian Bale's weird Batman impression.
Yeah. So. And there's a couple of scenes which is, where his accent does extremely strange things.
Forgive me, I'm a little confused.
And it's like he's trying not to sound Irish, but it's failing like miserably. He's
trying not to be Mayor Carcetti is what it's happening. But yeah, other than that, you might hear us colloquially toss out a Cheryl, which is mm-hmm. Cersei, or a Larry, which is her brother lover, Jamie. And yeah, that's just...
Walder Filch, maybe?
Walder Filch instead of Walder Frey, because he played Filch. It's an exceedingly clever nickname. But this is honestly, at this point, this is just how we entertain ourselves when we're watching it. So you'll hear it slip out. We might call her Sansa. We might call her Brittany. I don't actually know what's going to happen to us. But what we're going to do...
Yeah, all our notes, I think, say Sansa.
Yeah, all our notes say Sansa. But basically, because we know a lot of our listeners don't actually watch the show too, we are going to step through and let you know what happened in this plotline with a recap. But because Julia and I can never actually just recap something without going into excessive detail, we're going to give
We're just
going to
embrace that.
Yeah, we're going to call it an analysis-ish recap. And then at the end of it, we will recap our analysis. So.
Oh my god, I'm gonna be here till midnight, aren't I? Okay.
Let's go. We have to edit. We better not be. All right. So without further ado, we jump into episode 1 of season 7 called Dragonstone.
And there's a cold open.
Of course there is. So what is it? Can you, let's talk about this cold open, Joya.
Well, let's talk about the previously on, because the previously on end with like, I call it Maisie Williams' empowerment face. When, like, after she kills Walder Filch, she has this, like, empowerment face on it, and I find it so hilarious. And, what's his face who plays Walder Filch?
Yeah.
Actually, like, does a really good job playing Maisie Williams. It's kind of weird.
So for context, Maisie Williams has thus donned Walder Filch's face. And by Maisie Williams, we mean Arya.
Yes.
And has been cosplaying as Walder Filch for what we learn is 2 weeks.
Well, I think so. Because first, what's the appropriate pronoun in this context?
She.
She. Okay. First, she says that they just had a feast. And since when does Walder Frey have 2 feasts within 1 fortnight?
She says this as Walder Frey.
Yeah.
This is weird for a feudal society, is it not?
I don't know. I mean, like, it's only his, like, own offspring that are here for this feast, so maybe it's, like, actually an intimate family dinner. But I don't know. Like, yeah, it does seem like it's been 2 weeks, but it could be, like, less than that. It's, like, rewatching it, it's not as clear.
Yeah.
It might just be a dumb line.
No, I think she says, no, because the line is, and I'm sorry, the scene is that Maisie Williams, Arya Stark, why are we calling her Maisie Williams, with Walder Frey's face on, announces to a hall full of Freys that this is the second feast in 2 weeks and how rare. And yeah, obviously the first
feast was 3 days ago, it's still the second feast in 2 weeks.
What a weird way to put it. When you say
this, I know it is a weird way to put it. I'm just saying,
I feel like at least a week has passed. And the question is, of course, what has Arya impersonating Filch been doing for 2 weeks?
Clearly hanging out with her child bride, who was just kind of standing there awkwardly.
Oh my god.
Doesn't even get a chair.
she also, yeah, so then there's a really weird detail where she's like, enough of this Dornish piss, let's have some Arbor Gold. And then it cuts to a close-up of the wine being poured, and it is obviously red wine.
I mean, maybe it's Arbor Gold because it's of great value, not because of its color.
But what a weird line. They didn't have to say anything.
Yeah, but there's this whole thing, like, there's an emphasis on, like, all these serving wenches with their, like, mini flagons full of wine. So, like, the wine's important, you can kind of tell. So, while everyone is getting poured and drinking the wine, he goes into this, like, weird speech.
Or she, yeah.
She. What is gender? He goes into this, he, she. The woman inside the man's body is... Like, literally inside the man's body is...
We're not trying to misgender anyone. We literally don't know what to say in this situation.
It's kind of like in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, they talk about, like verb tenses and time travel. It's kind of like that. So anyway, she starts speechifying about how great the phrase are for the Red Wedding. She calls it the Red Wedding, which is weird. And then it slowly morphs into telling them off for the Red Wedding.
Like, it took a lot of courage to stab a pregnant woman.
And just as, like, everyone is like, this is a weird speech, they start, like, bleeding from the mouth and dying of the poison.
But it should be noted that she waved the female child bride off of taking a drink, using a gendered excuse, I'd waste a wine on a bloody woman.
Well, it's Arbor Gold.
It's Arbor Gold that's red, after all. But, so it was like a... Specifically only poisoning the men of House Frey?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Even specifically, just like, I don't know if it's... Well, because none of the other wives or daughters were there. It was just like all of his male wenches, offspring.
But that's like...
Which like begs the question, like, why is... Yeah, I'm the serving wenches. Why is the child bride there at all? Why did they pour her wine if she's not allowed to drink it anyway?
No. She had to be the witness because then... Maisie Williams, I'm sorry, Arya whips off the filch mask to reveal that it's Arya. And
all of the serving wenches are just like, this is a strange situation.
And then she says to the horrified child bride,
yeah,
tell everyone what happened here. This is what happens, and winter came for them, or whatever. And I'm Arya Stark.
Yeah, and none of the serving wenches are like, let's tell everyone we know that we saw Arya Stark kill a room full of people and then pull a face off of her face.
But, like, word gets out that they're all dead.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is the cold open to the entire season. I feel like we didn't point this out.
And then Arya walks out and all the guards and all the vassals of House Frey just kind of let her do this, I guess?
Well, she had an empowered smirk on. You don't just stop a woman with an empowered smirk.
That's true, I
guess.
What
do they do? Ask, like, a follow-up question? Like, who
are
you?
I mean, maybe
why are you wearing Walder Frey's clothes?
Get their guards from the same agency that the Dornish do.
I think my favorite detail of this is that the actor who plays Walder Frey is not a short man, and Maisie Williams is, like, 4'11" or something. she's probably taller than that, but she's short.
She just looks like a very short person next to Sophie Turner, who is, like, 6 feet.
Okay, so the official word is that Maisie Williams is 5'1".
Okay.
Either way.
Yeah, so shorter than average.
Shorter than Walder Frey.
Definitely shorter than Walder Frey. She must be staying in a box or something. Maybe the masks are so magic that they also alter your height. They do alter your voice.
It took, like, 8 minutes to describe this scene.
I mean, it's the most special scene. Well, there's one other scene that's as special.
Oh, you're right.
But it's a very special scene.
Anyway, our next scene that deals with this is Bran and Mira. Remember who Mira is? It doesn't matter. Arriving at the wall. And Bran was like, he had a vision of the Army of the Dead and they exist.
It's a really nice vision.
Yeah, there's a white giant. It's cool.
Yeah, like, I think... If this was, like, an actual adaptation that didn't piss me off, the only problem I would have with it is how often they're showing the others. But in an adaptation that wouldn't piss me off, they wouldn't do that, so it's kind of...
Well, they made the others ridiculous with their samurai armor, but I agree with you.
They just, like, they've been just showing them way too much.
Anyway, so a gloveless Mira arrived at the wall, pulling the sled, and Dolos Ed, who had been made Lord Commander as a punchline last season, comes out, and he's like, oh... Who are you? And Mira says who they
Why is the Lord Commander opening the gate for random presumed wildlings
who really
show up?
He's really hands-on with leadership. Also, I think there's like 4 people left at this point.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, so Mira explains who they are, and he's like dubious, and he's like, how do I know who you are? And Bran just goes, you were at the Fist of the First Men. You saw the Army of the Dead.
Like, okay, that's something.
freaky dude, but like yeah. that doesn't prove that you're Bran Stark. Either way, Ed's freaked out enough that he just like lets them in.
And then we don't see Bran for like 3 or 4 episodes.
It's like, okay. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's only 7 episodes this season, so that's so kind of weird. Back to Winterhell.
Winterhell proper. And here's the thing. The first couple of scenes here, I think, are really more about Jonny. So as we recap it, let's try to be mindful of Sansa, specifically Sansa's role in this. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot about Jonny that's just so stupid.
So Jon, for some reason that everyone's kind of like starting to look askance, I think, at themselves going, why is he king again? But yeah, Jonny is king now. And he's having this like council, I suppose, with all the lords of the North and the Vale. And he starts talking about Dragonglass and how they need to get Dragonglass. And everybody ask your maesters about Dragonglass because we got to get it because it kills the whites.
The White Walkers. Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. They don't say the White Walkers. They say the whites, which.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
But, okay.
But they were also like rocks and sticks. Okay, whatever.
Yeah, let's accept that sure. Dragonglass kills the whites in this continuity.
Dragonglass kills everything. Dragonglass, you stick a Dragonglass in someone's heart and they become a white, you're a White Walker.
Another.
And
you
stick another Dragonglass in their heart and they become Benjen Coldhands. I mean,
yeah,
it's really useful.
That's why Jonny is very interesting in them. And also, he decides what is the patriarchy. We're going to train everybody, including the girls, to fight in combat.
Well, like, here's the thing, because he basically says, we have to shore up our defenses, there's an army of the dead coming, we need everyone fighting, and then he also talks about the castles. So, like, that is not at all a stupid focus.
No.
And
I mean, but, like, how it would actually work, we need to shore up all defenses, all the boys have to train in combat, all the girls and the women have to, like, fucking knit socks and make sure all the provisions are ready and, like, all that shit, right? Like, that's how it actually works.
But what D&D wrote, D&D being Benioff and Weiss, that's what we call him because it's David Benioff and Dan Weiss.
And
I feel like we never explain that.
Yeah, well, it's not even just them. It's they're like there's really only right. 4 writers
but
at
like,
this point.
They're writers. Yeah. Yeah, them, Dave Hill and Brian Cogman basically just slopped in 21st century conceptions of feminism, which is the boys and the girls fight. And they just kind of
which
slopped
is not
it in here.
Unheard of in the source. It's not even that the girls will fight. It's just, it's not even the idea that like women would be in combat in the situation. It was just not stupid and it's not something that doesn't exist in the source material. But it's just the complete kind of like, the way that they just piss on the entire idea that like an army needs socks.
Yeah, and, you know, Lyanna Mormont stands up and is like, you know, I'm not going to be knitting by the fire while my men fight. And it's like, well, okay, but someone needs to be knitting by the fire.
Yeah.
Someone needs to be knitting. So
it's cold. They need socks.
Sansa doesn't really have a reaction to this thing. But the next thing that he brings up is that there are 2 defensive strongholds in between the Wall and Winterfell, the Karstark and the Umbers castles, which are the first 2 places that the army.
Okay, let's just accept it.
Yep. Just roll with it. Just roll with it. I mean, Umbers is Last Hearth, so you know. But fucking Royce, the Vale Lord, stands up and he's like, "We need to tear these castles down because they were traitors." And Sansa is just kind of like sitting in the room thinking everyone's a moron.
Yeah, it's like, why would you tear down castles when he just said that they're the first line of defense?
Yeah, so she goes like, dude, the castles didn't do anything wrong. We're obviously going to give them to our allies who sided with us during the Battle of the Bastards, which is the
which,
inverse
that's what she
canonical
calls it.
Name.
Yeah. Yeah. And Jon is like, no, we're not going to give it to reward the people who sided with us against all odds. We're going to keep it in the families that betrayed us. Which is also not stupid, but also like just the way the way they frame it, it makes it stupid.
it's just like because also it shows that he's turning over these castles to like a 10-year-old boy and a 14-year-old girl, and it's like I'm sure they know a lot about defense, but I would also think
more
these
than me,
Vale
probably
lords that just showed up probably know more too. And the way it's also framed is that the Northern lords just cheer with whoever spoke last. So like Sansa says, we're gonna give them to our allies, and everyone's like, yeah, and Jon's like, no, we're gonna give them to the Karstark and the Umbers. I won't punish the sons for the crimes of the fathers, and everyone's
which
like,
again is not stupid. But like, just it's
neither.
Not. No, like it's not like the way it's framed is that Jon is right in the situation and Sansa's wrong.
And they both have points.
And they don't have, they both have valid points. And maybe they were trying to frame it as a legitimate discussion, but that's not how it came across to me.
No, and then the super awkward part is that the Karstark and Umberlords are right there, like in the room whenever it's discussed.
Yeah. You know what's also right super there. Awkward? Mm-hmm. This is one of two times when, while he's still at Winterfell, that Jonny casually brings up the fact that he deserved the Night's Watch.
Yeah. Again, more for Jon's plotline. The yeah. scene that follows is Sansa and Jon, and Jon is basically like, oh, you can't question me in public, that undermines my authority. And Sansa's like, well, okay, first of all, saying that I can't question you, I've known some pretty terrible people like Joffrey who have said you can't question them, and yeah. that's not good. And he's like, are you saying I'm Joffrey? So it's basically just Sansa soothing his hurt feelings after yeah. that.
And then, and like,
yeah,
like, okay, so maybe she wouldn't question your decisions in public if you bothered to discuss your decisions beforehand with the people you need to agree with you in public.
She is technically the Lady of Winterfell. I know they don't. No, she is the Lady of Winterfell. Leaves. Yeah, but like, she has political importance there. She's also the mm-hmm. reason all those Vale troops are there.
So she's sitting at the table at the head of the room. So, yeah, so
maybe like run your plans by her, dude. Oh, we forgot
and
to
Davos
mention,
apparently.
Yeah, but Batfinger was like skulking against the wall. And
he has a spot on the wall that he loves, and in every scene that takes place in this room, he's just kind of standing there.
We call it wall spot. We should add wall spot to the, like, when I introduce the fandom nicknames in the retrospective, we'll just have a picture of wall spot. but yeah, I don't know. It's kind of like the scene between them. Sansa's basically just like soothing Jon's ego, but then also saying like, look, you have to be really smart. Ned and Rob, I love them, but they made mistakes and they died. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to help you. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, how would I be smarter? By listening to you? It's like, yes. And then for some reason, she basically talks about how like Cersei has killed.
Yeah, well, she says that she's concerned basically that he's focusing so much on the threat from the north and not the threat from the south, i.e. Cheryl.
Right.
And she's like trying to convince him basically that like she's dangerous. And then he's just like, oh, you sure do admire Cheryl, don't you?
And then Sansa goes, I learned a lot from her. Which, but
she learned how to use her vagina to get power.
Well, not to be disturbing and victim blaming, but season 6 or season 5 showed us that she didn't, right? So
yeah,
cool. Anyway, the next
scene whatever is- the point is that Sansa is disturbingly ambitious. Okay,
obviously in evidence,
and just like Cheryl. Anyway,
so the next scene is still in Winterfell proper, Winterhell, and it's Brienne training Pod while Tormund continues to flirt with her because
just like cleared her. He like. Brienne punches Pod in the face, and Beardy is all like, you're a lucky man.
So Julia wrote in the notes, does she play Brienne exactly like she plays Phasma? And I mean, who
I mean, it's only in this scene that I really noticed it, but it was just like...
Phasma doesn't have a character.
Exactly, so and I think it's Brienne in the scene.
Yeah, they're just both stalking around with swords. Or whatever.
Yeah, but this is how I imagine, like, Phasma trains, like, baby stormtroopers.
Anyway, Littlefinger and Sansa, Batfinger and Sansa are watching. And
because Brittany's new hobby is just like watching this from, things from like Ned's old spot.
Yeah, and for some reason, I don't know, Batfinger was like telling her to be careful, and Brittany says, I have Brienne to protect me from anyone that would harm me.
He says that he wants her to be safe and happy.
Yeah, so like, this is seeding. Basically, something happens between Sansa and Brittany in this plot line, and this is seeding whatever it is, and the best guess I can make, and I hope I'm not spoiling things for you, dear listeners, but I think Sansa basically gets suspicious that Brienne would ultimately have her back over Arya's back later on. I think. So she just, like, eventually has doubts about Brienne, and I think this is seeding it. But at the same time, like, she doesn't seem to be listening to anything Littlefinger says.
Why would she?
At all. She basically is just like he walks away after she's like, you know, don't seize the last word, I'll pretend it was clever, and he kind of like skulks off, and then Brienne is like, pardon me lady, but why is he still
why the fuck
around?
Is he here?
And we're like, yeah, good question, Brienne. And Brittany's answer to her is basically like, he's creepy, but I'm using him. And
yeah, we need his men.
Yeah. So, like, it's fine. It would be a whole thing to, like, tell them what happened with Lysa. It's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to get into it. I guess we'll get into it when, like, the multiple scenes that contradict this scene happen. But, like, she says she doesn't, like, she acts like she doesn't want to talk to Littlefinger, and she's ignoring him and thinks he's creepy. But then she, multiple times, she, like, of her own volition goes to him for advice. So, okay.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Maybe she doesn't want to talk to him when it's a D&D episode, but when it's... Nope, there's no pattern to it. Never mind. Okay.
Okay, so then... there's three very special, extra special scenes. They all involve Arya.
Oh my god. Yeah, well, so this is the last scene, and we're still in the opener episode. Just describe the story. I can't.
Okay, so Arya is riding her horsey through a very pretty forest, and Ed Sheeran and a bunch of his buddies are there, and they're cooking some rabbits, and they're singing.
They're singing Hands of Gold for some fucking reason.
Yeah, that's all right. But fine, let's sing a song that Tyrion wrote in the second book. Why not?
No, or, the dude wrote for Tyrion, so yeah, but yeah, it so doesn't matter. Yeah. It's just stupid.
So they like see her and they're like, come share our rabbit. We're Lannister troops, but we're super nice. So this is like meaningful.
Yeah. So she like sits down with them and, there's trouble with the Freys up at the twins. By trouble, do you mean they were all murdered? So we're the ones who are like going to keep the peace or whatever. And then I don't even know. It's just Maisie Williams being chummy on a log with Ed Sheeran and
Maisie Williams. Acting in a way that is totally unlike Arya acts in any other scene this season.
Yeah, just like nice and social, and they're sharing rabbits.
And they ask her if she's old enough to drink.
The idea behind the scene is to humanize the enemies that she's so fixated on killing, obviously.
But it has no influence on anything.
No, and it just is there. It just is there.
No, just because I was thinking while I was watching the scene. Because when they ask her why she's going to King's Landing, and for some reason I thought of Roz in the first season who goes to King's Landing to do like more high class form of sex work. And she's just like, I wonder if she had a scene like this in her journey down.
After she flashed Theon, yeah.
After she flashed Theon.
Alright, so on to episode 2, Stormborn.
Yes.
So we're back at Winterhell proper, and Tyrion... Mm-hmm. sent a letter to Jon basically like, hey, Deadpan and I are on Dragonstone. We have these awesome armies and dragons. You should come visit and bend your knee.
It's a whole thing in that plotline. We'll get to it eventually.
Yeah, it's just, this is not relevant. And,
Davos, since he's there with his folksy wisdom, is like, hey, you know what? I think maybe dragons might be useful against the army of the dead.
Yeah, but it's funny because Sansa immediately is like, this is a risk. I would not do this. And Jon's like, ugh. And that's kind of the scene. And then they're overlooking co-ed archery classes. I don't know. It's important to know. But the next scene is another Arya scene.
Hooray.
How do they pronounce it? It's like Aya. They say it weird on the show.
Well, like, in this scene, she gets called Ari, so.
Ari. Yeah, so it transitions from
oh my god, yeah, so the previous scene before it is the one in Old Town where Sam is flaying the creepy stalker, and they do like a transition from that to a guy like dipping a spoon into a chicken pot pie.
I didn't want to vomit at all.
And they're like gossiping about politics. They just watched like the Rachel Maddow show on MSNBC, and they're like talking over all the news of the day.
Side note, by the way, I showed Griffin the poop slopping montage with no context because he hasn't seen the show, and he was like, "Why is this like a comedy?" I don't know, but anyway, Arya is like overhearing dudes eating pot pie talking about how they want to get to King's Landing or something.
Yeah,
and then. Hot pie.
So they're talking about Deadpan and her dragons. They're talking about like all this shit that Cheryl's done in King's Landing. There's obviously like very good transition of like current events news in Weiseroth.
And then Hot Pie comes over and he's like, Ari, of all the gin joints. And she like grabs food off his plate that's obviously not hers. And he's like, okay. And then she asks.
And then she acts like an asshole while he's trying to like catch up with his old friend.
She acts feral. She's like stuffing food into her face with her hands and is being really messy and can't make eye contact.
And like she chugs down a whole mug of beer. And
even though she was very nicely eating the rabbit and chumming it up with Ed Sheeran like a second ago.
Yeah.
But Hot Pie is just like casually like, oh, I heard that, you know, Cheryl blew up the set.
And she's like, yeah, sounds legit. And then he's like, I'm confused as to why you would go to King's Landing and not to Winterfell or Winterhell where your family is. And she's just like, what? No, my family's not in Winterhell. I didn't hear this news at any point.
I wasn't pretending to be Walder Frey for 2 weeks.
Oh my god, yeah.
No news comes to the twins.
And so Hot Pie is just like, yeah, Battle of the Bastards, which is his official name.
It's the inverse kind of name. They call it Battle of the Bastards.
That happened. So now Jon Snow is the King of the North, and she's just like, oh, what an extremely interesting piece of news. So she goes, she like says bye to Hot Pie, the guy who was like, you know, her companion in survival travel.
By the way, at one point in the conversation, he's so disturbed by her behavior that he says, like, what happened to you? Because that's how disturbing she's acting.
Yeah, she's just acting really weird and not at all. Like, I think, like, she just really likes Ed Sheeran and she doesn't like this guy, but okay. And then so she goes outside back to her horsey. Too.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And there's this whole thing where she's just like, oh my god, where should I go? Should I go down to King's Landing or should I turn around and go back to Winterhell? So she turns around and she goes back to Winterhell.
Yeah.
Very awkwardly, like past the twins. But whatever.
Why did she ever go to Braavos so she can be creepier than RoboBran? Thank you, Joy, for that note.
No, it's just like, so what would have happened if instead of going on that ship at the end of season 4, she just like, never went to Braavos.
Well, she needs to learn how to apply the Halloween masks.
What did that add in the end?
She can.
Like, I guess she killed the phrase, but what did that add in the end?
Well, it's how she defeats the patriarchy, Julia. She can be anyone she wants. We'll get into it. No, I mean, it was literally just the skill of her training to be an assassin. Did she need to be there for two years? Obviously not, which is what we talked about in our season 6 retrospective. Arya Todd drops out of school. But no, I mean, yeah, she just...
Basically, so now her entire plot line with her list and everything has just been jettisoned because she's just like, no, I'm gonna forget about killing Cheryl and I'm gonna go back home.
I think there's nothing wrong with her wanting that family. I don't think there's anything wrong with that at this point in her plotline, but I do think Braavos was a complete diversion because we didn't even learn. Like, we didn't see
I think it's just indicative of poor planning.
Yeah, we just saw her getting hit with a stick, though, remember?
Like, yeah.
It's just hard to say that time was spent well.
I mean, I guess you could argue, if you're being super generous, that they seeded her longing for her family over anything else last season.
Well, hey... let's just jump around real quick, because the next Arya scene really should have come before this scene to seed it, because the next Arya scene is just, we're jumping around because this one comes later in the episode, but it doesn't really matter because her plotline's not super matched up. It's her in the woods heading north, and then she gets surrounded by a wolf pack, and then Nymeria, a giant direwolf, comes up. And why are you laughing?
Yeah, because just the series, like, I think, like, you can't get animals to act, right? Like, you can't, because they're animals, just like babies. You can't get them to actually act. So it's just clearly a bunch of dogs they have standing around, and then they have this giant, like, CGI direwolf who's, like, growling, but, like, all the other dogs are just, like, kind of standing there chill.
They're just
huskies. And you're just like, why are the other dogs... like, it just all looks so fake.
They're wolves, Julia. We're probably going to learn, like, behind the scenes that they brought in, like, the best world wolf trainers that money could buy.
Yeah, well, probably. But, like, you can't, like, even the best trained wolves cannot act, right?
No. So either way, it's Nymeria, and Arya gets really emotional seeing her, as one does. And she is like, I'm going home, girl. Come with me. And then Nymeria just, like... Fucks off. And then she says, that's not you. Which, egg on our face, we forgot as our favorite trip down, for the Carol Awards, we forgot to list that as best trip down Game of Thrones memory lane.
Yeah, because it's a callback to the scene where Arya and Ned are talking about what Arya's gonna be when she grows up. And she, like, Ned's basically like, oh, you're going to be, like, a lady in a castle. And she's just like, no, that's not me. That's Sansa. So it's supposed to be a callback to that, right?
What a stupid way to have that callback. I would see, like, wouldn't it have made more sense if Sansa was like, you could totally do what I'm doing. Like, you're strong. And she'd be like, that's not me. Like, showing an appreciation for Sansa's skills. I think if there's a way to call back the scene, it's not saying that's not you to a CGI direwolf we actually haven't seen for years, causing people on the internet to think that literally wasn't Nymeria.
Yeah.
And my point was, isn't the seeing her wolf supposed to be evoking something about her home? So doesn't it make more sense if she sees the wolf and then is like, I'm sorry, girl, I have to go south and kill the Lannisters. I don't know. Whatever. I can't.
I don't, because I'm so confused now. Like, I'm thinking about last season and whether or not they actually suited this, because when she like kills the asshole and she goes to Dr. Tom the temple, she says, I'm going home. But then the first thing she does when she gets home, quote unquote, is kill Walder Frey and then say, I'm going to go kill the queen.
She meant like to her continent, I guess.
But is she supposed to be conflicted about this?
She looked conflicted when she was turning her head both ways on the road.
Yeah. I mean, is this a feature, not a bug, is my question.
I think what's clear is, because I just reread our season 6 retrospective of her, and they did not seed her regaining her Stark identity through that plague. They did it horribly, and she never really lost it. So there's actually no reason for us to think that she wouldn't go home. So I don't know if it's character growth or what. Like,
but
I think it's not out of place.
But she's clearly committed to this whole list thing.
I think it's not out of place for this character to want to go home and see John.
Yeah.
But the Nymeria.
So what was the point of that whole, like, list thing at all?
Because she's eventually going to cross everyone off.
But they kind of jettisoned that when she turned around and went home to Winterhell.
It's showing the futility of. But it was framed as a good thing when she killed Frey.
Yeah, but it was also framed as a good thing when she turned around to go home.
Uh-huh. She got new information, and I guess it's just showing that her priorities are always family over revenge. And then she totally lives up to that once she gets home. And the Nymeria scene is just, what is the point of showing that she's out of touch with her wolf at all?
No, I don't think it's supposed to show that she's not in touch with her wolf. It's supposed to show that, like, she gets that you can't force people into roles.
But here's the issue. You can't separate Nymeria from her context as, like, the symbol of the Starks and Arya's connection D&D to can. Her family. Okay. Let's go to Winterhell proper. Uh-huh. Johnny gets a raven from the Citadel from Sam, being like, by the way, remember that time Stannis told us that there is dragon glass on Dragonstone? Well, I remember that book that said the same thing. You should check out Dragonstone. So, in the hall, John just, again, casually mentions he deserted the Night's Watch, and then is like, there's dragon glass on Dragonstone, and everyone's like, oh!
And then he's like, also, I got this letter from Tyrion telling me to go to Dragonstone, so I am going to go to Dragonstone.
And I'm going to talk with this dragon queen, and I'm going to ask her for dragon glass. And
Sansa's like, this is obviously a trap. Remember when our grandpa went south and he died, and our dad went south and he died, and our brother went south and he died?
Also, remember how this is the House Targaryen asking you to bend the knee?
Yeah.
And so then he's like, no, I have to, we have to take this chance. So then she's like, okay, send an emissary because you're just asking to be a prisoner. Yeah. And he says, and I quote, she is a queen. Only a king can persuade her. What?
Also, this, like, speech is so beyond Kit Harington's abilities as an actor. He's, like, trying to be all, like, dramatic and kingly, and he's just, like, being Kit Harington.
I didn't ask to be the queen. I didn't ask to be king. You made me king. And I accepted, because the North is my home. And I'm now gonna go south, because of the North. And you're like, then Arya says, like, you're abandoning your people, like, all these other Northerners pop up, and they're like, yeah, we need you here. But yeah, he delivers this speech that basically amounts to nothing of him saying, like, well, I think I need to do this.
And yeah, and Sansa's like, you're abandoning your people. He's like, no, 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 I'm leaving you in charge.
Yeah, she says, you're abandoning your people. No. Because I'm leaving I'm leaving Winterfell and capable hands. Who's yours? What? You didn't talk about this?
Yeah, like, no, seriously, like, the biggest feature of Jon's kingship is how he doesn't have a council. Why doesn't he have a council?
And, like, asking someone to run Winterfell, it's not like asking someone to feed your cat for a week. There's a lot of responsibility. You think he might have wanted to, I don't know, prep Sansa to do that?
Yeah. Because he basically just appointed her regent. He didn't say watch the castle. He said watch the north. You know, like,
until I'm back, the north is yours. I think.
Yeah, that's what he says.
And then, like, Bran is like head nodding, like, yeah. Okay.
She's super proud.
Then we get a scene. God knows why.
Well, he wants to say bye to Dad before he leaves.
Yeah, fine. John's saying goodbye to a statue of Ned in the crypts, and Batfinger is just there. And then he comes up to him and he says,
just like starts talking at him.
My best. Your dad and I both loved Kat. Kat underestimated you since you're the best hope for the North. Also, I'm not your enemy. Also, I love Sansa. That's what his speech boils down to.
Yeah, and like, then Johnny is just like, what the fuck? Like, why did you come in here to my dad's grave and just like bullshit at me for a full 30 seconds?
Yeah, he shoves him up against the wall and like strangles him. He's like, talk to my sister and I'll kill you myself. And I recall her asking him to stop trying to protect her. But, yeah. Whatever. Basically he had been trying to like be protective. She's like, stop trying to protect me and be fucking smart.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh.
Instead, I'm going to threaten a major ally of mine.
Oh my god. It's not like the Vale troops came or whatever. So he like leaves and Sansa doesn't even go down to say goodbye to him.
It's the most chill like leaving of a king for an undetermined amount of time ever.
They literally just like wave, like it's kind of the wave that you do when you're like in a crowd and you spot someone that you're an acquaintance with but you don't really know, and you're just like, hey, I'm gonna go over here though to my seat. Yeah, that's what they do.
Yeah.
Then that's it. That's those like, are all the scenes.
Yeah. Or like when like you had an unamicable divorce and you're like handing over the kid and you're just kinda like bye, right. Ex-husband.
So that was two episodes in.
Okay, so the good news is we only have 5 episodes left. The bad news is it took us like 40 minutes to get through 2 episodes.
Well, there's a mess. I don't know. The next episode is called Queen's Justice.
Yes. And speaking of queen, Brittany is running things.
Oh my god. She's like, she's walking through the Winterhell courtyard, like, just clearly doing everything.
Yeah.
And being John from A Dance with Dragons.
Talking about, like, grain stores and stuff, and like, there was this whole thing where John was just like, this is a lot of meat, and like, the quartermaster was like, this is enough meat for like 2 years, we need meat for like 8 years.
Yeah, because she basically asks what's the longest winter on record in the last 100 years, and this flunky maester doesn't know.
Is it the same maester from last year who Ramsay killed his dad in front of?
This is him. This is the same one.
Poor guy. He's been through a lot.
He's still better than Shyster Maester. Although I bet Shyster and Maester would have known, because seriously, what kind of maester doesn't know the length of the seasons? That's like the one feature of this world. But yeah, so she basically is like, we don't have enough grain, so just like ask everyone to start giving to us now. They're all going to come to Winterfell anyway, and if they come in a hurry, they're not going to be bringing wagons of grain with them. And then she sees people making breastplates.
And she criticizes the breastplate making.
Because they're not covering it with
leather. Which apparently is not a thing.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I think I remember hearing on the interwebs, that covering breastplates with leather for warmth is not a thing.
I think they just wear leather underneath and it's fine. But Bronzion Royce goes to set them straight because he literally never leaves his breastplate.
He knows about breastplates.
All occasions. I mean, he wears the biggest breastplate.
So Littlefinger kind of gets her off by herself and is complimenting her on her, like, leadership skills because she's actually like leading.
Leadership suits you.
Yeah.
And she's just like, okay, whatever. And has no interest in entertaining him. Seriously. None.
Yeah. And he tells her that, like, you have to be a supercomputer and, like, foresee all eventualities or something at all times. Like, you have to assume everyone's your enemy. You have to assume everyone's your friend. I mean, it's not, like, bad advice. It's just kind of... It might make you a little paranoid.
What does he say? It was really weird.
Yeah, it was definitely a trailer line.
Oh, right, because he's, like, saying it's dangerous, and she's like, oh, thank you for telling me that Cersei's dangerous. Like, that was wise counsel. And he's like, don't fight in the north or the south. Fight every battle, everywhere, always in your mind. Everyone is your enemy. Everyone is your friend. Every possible series of events is happening all at once. Live that way and nothing will surprise you.
So it's half like actual good advice and half like that's gonna make you paranoid.
Like, I mean, I guess friendship would surprise you.
Yeah.
You know what does surprise her?
Bran.
Yeah,
remember Bran?
I do remember Bran.
Well, Bran is just like in a wagon and he's arrived at Winterhell and Mira is there, we know because of like a 2-second reaction shot.
And she has no gloves still.
Yeah, Brittany is super happy and she gives him a hug. And he's
Bran
like,
doesn't hug back.
He's like, hello, Sansa. That's like literally what he says.
So then she, like, takes him to the heart tree, either because he asked or because she just wants, like, a cooler place to chat.
Remember, the last time they saw each other, like, Bran was in a coma. They didn't even know he was paralyzed yet. Like, it's been a while.
Yeah, so she's, like, trying to talk to him, and she's basically has nothing to say. So she's like, well, your father's legal heir. You're the Lord of the Winterhell. Like, all this should be yours. And he's like, I can't be the Lord of Winterhell. I'm the three-eyed raven.
Can we just, like, make a little note, like, put a little, like, pin in the fact that she's just, like, casually giving away her seat to him?
With her hyper-ambition.
Yeah, let's just put a pin in that.
To her brother that she hasn't, her younger brother, who she hasn't seen, like, in a really long time.
Yeah.
And he's kind of super fucking weird.
Kind of fucking
but weird. Yeah, so he just says, oh, I'm the three-eyed raven. And she goes, I don't know what that means. It's complicated. Can you try to explain it? So then he says, it means I can see everything that's ever happened.
Yeah.
And then there's
and then he starts describing her wedding night.
Because he says something else. And she's like, where did you learn this? He says, from the three-eyed raven. I thought you were the three-eyed raven. I told you it was complicated. Like, oh my God.
Yeah, say so that it's a title that's passed on. That's not like complicated.
I guess to explain his visions, he's like, I can see everything that's ever happened. I'm so sorry for what happened to you. I'm sorry it had to happen here. And you looked so pretty that night. And he begins to describe the night she was
in her linebacker dress. Yeah,
when she was first raped by Ramsay at the wedding with the Sith Lord and Miranda and Hagrid's hanging out. Yeah. Oh, those are the simpler times of Game of Thrones analysis. Okay. He dispassionately describes one of the most traumatic nights of her life. And then she kind of just, you know, freaks out in a normal way for someone who's.
But like in a very like well-balanced way.
She just like stands up and she's like.
Yeah, but she's like freaked out, but she deals with it in an extremely mature way. She's just like, I will remove myself from this situation and I'm not even going to be rude about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she doesn't even, like, what happened to you? She's just, I have to go, and like, walks away.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all.
Brittany's awesome is our point.
Brittany is awesome. So, episode 4, The Spoils of War.
Ooh.
This fast clip that we're moving out.
So, Littlefinger decides to give Bran a dagger for reasons?
It's the dagger that the cutthroat tried to use on Bran, the dagger that pretty much... got Catelyn investigating everything and then Littlefinger pinned everything on the Lannisters and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
But he just hands it to him and then
to curry favor ?
That's the best sense of it I can make because basically he hands it to him and then uses the dagger as a jumping off point to discuss how Cat tried to die for Bran and how
it's a lot like Kat. His scene in the crypt with Jon. He's just kind of talking around him for 30 seconds.
He's sucking up, yeah.
Yeah, and then like Jon and Bran were both just like, okay, I have no interest in your bullshit.
Yeah, because Bran just basically says chaos is a ladder to freak him out. And then, so obviously this also implies that he knows everything about Littlefinger.
Yeah. At this point. I mean, that's clearly the implication that he knows everything that Littlefinger has done. Yeah.
So he already, did he like not think to share this with Brittany at this point?
Or? No, she doesn't care. Just like she doesn't care about the news of who John's parents are.
Oh, for fuck's sake. But yeah, I mean,
John, okay, Bran's like main objective is audience satisfaction. Okay.
Like
he knows exactly when the reveal will be dramatically satisfying.
That's what the three-eyed raven is. It's the script editor. But, like, it's not especially stupid that if that dagger existed, Littlefinger would bring it up and then say that to bullshit Bran. But yeah. It's especially stupid that Littlefinger has it, whips it out, and gives it to Bran.
No, I think he has it in the source material.
Yeah, but, like, it's just so clunky. I mean, he just appears in the room with the dagger.
Mm.
Like, this is the way he thinks to suck up. I know what will win me over. I'll give him a Valyrian steel dagger. That, it was just clunky. It's just clunky, guy. Anyway, Bran gets another visitor. It's Mira. And she's like, well, I'm going home now. And Bran's just, oh, okay.
Yeah, and she's just like, what? Is that all you have to say? And he's like, thanks.
So then she starts, like, crying at him. That yeah. Basically...
Because she basically says that, like, you know, the Bran and you died in that cave, and now you're just this, like, robot with his body.
Which, yep.
Yeah, and Bran is like, he's like, basically explains that now that he's the three-eyed raven, it's like, it's not like he doesn't like her and he's not grateful. It's just he has so many experiences that he can't really separate the experiences of, and feelings of Brandon Stark from all of that.
Which
again,
way, guys,
is not stupid. This it's a really cool concept.
No, Joy, it's stupid because this wasn't in evidence last season. Remember,
but as a concept, it's not stupid.
The final scene when he goes back into the tower, just before that, he and Mira are like, she's like, are you ready for this? And he's like, I have to be. Yeah. And he's emoting and he's making eye contact with her and he's being pretty nice. So,
well, they don't plan from season to season, but as a concept, like I suppose you can argue that like he spent too much time under the sea since then. Right.
Did the baby crossfade make him lose touch with his humanity? Like,
no, I think like maybe like for that entire CrossFit workout where she was dragging him through the north, like he's spent most of that time in Visionland, and that's kind of disconnected him from reality in a way that he wasn't yet at that point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Why not?
I think the concept by itself is not stupid and actually kind of interesting.
You're probably right.
It's like the Trill from Star Trek.
It's not well.
No, it's definitely not well done. But, you know, I have a weakness for good ideas, even if they're in stupid packages.
Like Rogue One, yeah.
Yes, like Rogue One.
hey, you know what I really want is 5 minutes of burnt screen time.
Well, like, this season is so go, go, go that I'm not sure how you can fit that in. But, okay, let's do it.
Well, let's try. Let's say Arya goes to Winterhell.
Another sibling reunion?
Another sibling reunion, but we need to burn 5 minutes of screen time first. So let's just arbitrarily have two guards there that won't let her in.
Even though the door is like wide open.
The door is wide open.
Like, shouldn't you have like a big door with like a little door in it and like that thing where he says like, who goes there?
Also, feudalism sucks. I thought the point of the big castles was to shelter people, especially young, innocent girls in the patriarchy that totally exists.
Well, that's only like when there's a siege.
That's
know.
Only when there's a siege or when
I know, I think,
Sheeran is asking if she can drink.
I think I don't feel as strongly about this as like Caroline especially felt about this, that it's stupid that they didn't let her in.
Stupid.
Yeah, well, it's stupid because it's a dumb scene, but I don't think the fact that they wouldn't let her in is as stupid.
I think it's a little like...
Well, it's like point was so transparently to call back another season one scene. Where the same thing happens when Arya's trying to get into the Red Keep.
But, oh my god, we didn't put this on the list either. There's so many season one callbacks.
I thought we did put this on the list.
I don't remember. I think.
Yeah. So these guards, they like try to get through their F word quotient for the episode, and she just basically says that like, look, if I'm not Arya Stark, and you go get Lady Stark, and then like, you know, they'll kick me out and game over. But, like, if I am Arya Stark and she finds out that you wouldn't let me into the castle, imagine how much trouble you'll be. And they're like, yeah, that's a convincing argument. So they let her in and they tell her to go sit on this wagon.
Yeah, and she also finds out from them, by the way, that Jon is gone, but Sansa's ruling Winterfell. So, yes, they tell her to sit, and then she's like, I want to make a dramatic entrance. So she just fucks off.
Yeah. while they're like arguing with each other over who's going to go tell Sansa.
Yeah. So then they have to tell Sansa that they like lost this person claiming to be Arya. And Sansa's like, okay, just, you know, don't even worry about it.
I do everything around here anyway.
So it just opens with the crypts, and Sansa's walking down there because she like knows that's where Arya would have gone.
And Sophie Turner and Maisie Williams are super excited that they get to do a scene together.
That neither of them know how to act. I'm sorry. Like, neither of them knew what they were doing in the scene. It's like super obvious that it's just friends from, you know, 2016, 2017, whenever this was filmed, stuck in a room together. Like, anyway, Sansa says, like, you shouldn't have run away. I didn't run away. Do I have to call you Lady Stark now? And Sansa's like,
yeah, this is the first indication that you get that Arya might be a wee bit jealous of Sansa and all her titles and junk.
Anyway, Sansa tries to hug her. Mm-hmm. Arya doesn't hug back at first for some reason. And then there's like, they have nothing to talk about. And
they talk about Jon.
Yeah, he's king. And Sansa's like, oh, I wish he was still here. His head would explode if he
was here. Just like to fail the Bechdel test. I don't know.
Jon likes you better. there's also like, we have a lot to catch up on. Like, my story wasn't so pleasant. And, you know, mine either. So there's actually a moment where there's kind of like a recognition that they've both been through a lot.
Yeah.
And they hug each other after that, and this time Arya actually initiates it, and she hugs back, and it's actually kind of nice, because it's like, wow, we've both been through hell, and we're still here.
Yeah.
So it'll be really nice that they-
But it's like, more like Sophie Turner and Maisie Williams are talking about how they've been through hell with the paparazzi since the last time they saw each other, like, like-
It's not played well. It's, yeah. But like, you know, you kind of get the feeling like, oh, they're a little weird with each other, but, you know, sisterly bonding, and they're happy to be back home in the same place.
Oh, and also Bran is here.
And Sophie Turner actually, to her credit, gets this, like, good look on her face when she says that line, because she's like, Bran's here.
Yeah.
And, but she says it with this, like, heaviness of, like, by the way, he's a fucked up robot. Also, Arya, like, sort of mentioned her list to Sansa, and Sansa's like, what?
Yeah, she's like, what list? Oh, the list of people I'm gonna kill. And Sansa's like,
both kind
of
like,
oh,
good one. Yeah, that's, your humor got weird, but okay. So yeah, anyway, the next scene is by the Heart Tree again, and Arya meets Bran, and Sansa's like, Bran has visions.
Yeah, it's like, because he's been like, he's like talking about like how he's been watching her basically, and she's just like, like, how do you know I was here or there or whatever?
He saw her debating which road to take at the end.
All right.
And then he like confirms basically her list of names and that she was killing everyone on it. And Sansa's like, oh,
and Sansa's like kind of like standing in the background of this conversation, like making commentary every once in a while. It's kind of weirdly blocked.
It's really, really freaking weird. Actually, there's this one, hold on, there's this one back, because basically Sansa's just trying to keep everyone on a normal conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, are you talking about that meme where, like, all those Stark siblings are saying weird-ass shit, and then the last cell was just Sansa going, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's the Stark reunion, and it's just like, I was dead and I'm alive again. Arya, I murder people. Bran, I'm a robot. Sansa, what the fuck? No, but, like, basically, it's confirmed that Arya is, like, a killer, and Sansa gets this, like, horrified look on her face, and then they kind of just, like, she's like, well, who else is on your list? And Arya's like, I don't know, most of them are dead. So then, just randomly, Bran whips out a dagger, the dagger that Littlefinger gave him. And Sansa's like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Why did he give you a dagger?
Yeah, why did Littlefinger give you that dagger?
And Bran's like, I don't know. And she's like, well, okay, but there's a reason he gave it to you. Well, I don't want it. No, Bran, no, there's a reason.
So he's like, it doesn't matter. I don't want it. Like, no.
And so she
it doesn't matter if you don't want the material thing. That doesn't make
it's just, the scene is just Sansa trying to be like, guys, can we focus on this? And Bran's like, I don't want it. Do you want it, Arya? And Arya's like, I'll take it. It's like, what the what is this? And then it just cuts to like
their bonding stroll.
Yeah, they it just isn't funny. Bran's in a wheelchair now, by the way.
The maester made him a wheelchair, which was nice of him.
But Arya pushes it in with Sansa walking there too, and then it just like Pod and Brienne see them, and Pod's like, oh, you should be very proud. And Bran's like, I hardly did anything.
You should be very proud that you fulfilled your vow.
It's like, yeah, you actually did nothing. And you scared off Arya the first time, so.
Bran's like, yeah, I did next to nothing. That's literally what he said.
Julia, I want to burn 5 more minutes of screen time.
Well, you know what I want? I want to really recycle some epic battle music.
Mm. Is there any way we can combine that?
Mm. Well, Brienne likes fighting.
Yeah.
You know who also likes fighting, apparently? Arya.
I'm not she did like stick hitting.
She did like stick hitting.
Or at least did it a lot. So, yeah, the next scene. Sansa's still going on about grain stores to Littlefinger, of all people. And then Brienne is training Pod below in the courtyard. So it's like, yeah. You know, Sansa's up high looking down in the courtyard. And Arya walks by and she's like, I want to train with you. And Brienne's like, I don't want to train you because there's a master at arms. And she's like, well, tough titties. We're training. That's verbatim, obviously.
Yeah, well, she says that, like, I want you to train me because you defeated the Hound. Like, can we talk about, like, how D&D are enamored of this, like, stupid fight that they pulled out of their asses?
Oh, my God. Anyway, so... Okay. Brienne agrees to train her, and yeah. Arya's like, oh, you swore to serve both my mother's daughters, right? So,
ooh, it's foreshadowing, I guess.
I don't know.
So then they have, like, a little, like, sparring session, but they're playing the epic fight music.
And credit where credit is due, because Maisie Williams is not a lefty, and she did learn how to do everything left-handed. She learned all the cool dagger throws, so it actually looks good. It does look good.
Yeah, but what are the stakes in this fight? Like, why is this, like, framed as an epic fight with, like, the epic choreography and the epic music and the epic editing?
Yeah, well, I mean, the stakes are just, like, I think it was just supposed to be showing them having fun with each other. Like, that's all it seemed to be. And then Sansa's look on her face.
Yeah, I think this is supposed, like, to be seeing again that she's concerned that Brienne is going to side with Arya.
Yeah, that's the only sense of it I can make.
Yeah.
The other possible option is that she's concerned that, like, she Arya's will have to use Brienne to kill Arya and Arya will win. I don't even know. I think it makes more sense to, like, go with, yeah, she's concerned that Arya's winning Brienne over.
Yeah.
Which is not really in evidence anywhere else. But then Brienne's like, who taught you to do that? And Arya's like, no one.
And I, like, barf a little bit in my mouth. Yeah.
Yeah, and what's actually fun is that no one taught her this, because all the asshole taught her was stick hitting with, like, a bow staff.
Yeah, which is, I guess, slightly transferable to a sword. But, like, back when she was still hanging out with Sandor Clegane, she did those, like, little, like, sword exercises, remember?
Yeah, so, honestly, he probably taught her. Yeah, and then the scene ends with Arya and Littlefinger exchanging a suspicious look, I think.
Okay.
Okay. So that takes us to the end of Spoils of War. And full confession, guys, it is now just me, just Kylie, recording this, like, I don't know, 3 weeks later, because I have that power, the power of editing. I can do that. So here's the thing, the total Winter Hell retrospective podcast that Julia and I recorded ended up being about 2.5 hours. And this was really the best place to split it, just because there's so much that happened in Eastwatch. And also because we took a bathroom break here anyway. So there's a natural stopping point. So I'm sorry that this episode is a little bit shorter. But in 1 week's time in our feed, we are going to have part 2 of this retrospective podcast out in our feed. And that will be like an hour, 15. Well, it's an hour and 15 without Joy and I having, recorded our intro and outro yet. Usually we record an outro together and we forgot that we needed to do that. And then my weekend was kind of full and this just, oh man, scheduling. It's just gotten away from us all season. So I apologize for that. I also have a special, unique Saltarello of extreme significance. Extreme emotional significance planned for this retrospective. I arranged it. I just never sat down on my piano to record it. So hopefully I'll have that for part 2. And God, nothing's ever going to match Cheryl's landing Saltarello with the plinky piano music. But hopefully this this will at least evoke something for you. If nothing else, it'll be a fun season one callback, just like the rest of this plot line. So yeah, I'm sorry that Julia's not here to lend her voice and to tell you goodbye, but I know she would, if she were here in spirit, she would be saying thank you for listening. Oh wait, that's my line. However, now that it's just me here, I'm going to read a couple of reviews that we got. So I'm going to read two more. Hopefully we'll move through these. These are just from the, either from iTunes or the podcast app. So this one from Shepherd 8 says, pointing out the Emperor's lack of clothes. Game of Thrones is a show that exists as a massive cultural phenomenon at this point, driven by unrivaled hype machine of blind devotion. Years ago, if you had told me this, I would have been over the moon to see my favorite series' TV adaptation to be one of the most popular television shows in history. Unfortunately, it's also an increasingly awful and lazy adaptation that thumbs its nose at book fans and George R.R. Martin himself at seemingly every opportunity. For those of us who are fans of things like themes, logic, and coherent storytelling, it's frustrating to see large parts of the fandom and media blinded by fancy special effects and exotic filming locations. Fortunately, Kylie and Julia are not going to let them get away with it and are not afraid to call a spade a spade. What's the thing that we're always saying about napkins being napkins? If you're a book fan who's frustrated when your all-time favorite lines are co-opted and mangled beyond recognition, Tyrion gains another unearned disciple on his road to godhood or kinslaying is received by applause and promotion, you are not alone. This is where being a book snob is a good thing. Aw, I wish I'd read that with Julia, but thank you so much to Shepherd 8 for that review. And we have, I'll read, these are two quicker ones, so I'll read two more because I'm so bad at reading these out. This one is by Diglesker Hardgichud. I'm sorry, I don't understand internet humor sometimes. It says, keep up the good work. I always enjoy listening to your explorations of Martin's themes and world building and D&D's utter failure to grasp any of it. Nice to hear A Song of Ice and Fire analyzed so thoroughly from a feminist perspective. And then Ozzy Loomis said, an excellent podcast about something. I'm sorry, I got cut off. About something. This podcast is fantastic. I've re-listened to a lot of them. This podcast has allowed me to understand the A Song of Ice and Fire books in ways that I might not have before. It's a fun listen for people excited about this material. Always look forward to the next one. So, thank you so much for those reviews that we got. I'm going to try to keep doing this as we go through, just so we give that shout out to the people who took the time, because yes, it's very deeply appreciated. Wow, that sounds so disingenuous. I'm really just feeling like overwhelmed by the positivity. And I'm also trying to keep my voice low and I'm very cognizant of my volume because there's a baby sleeping two walls over. So there's like a lot of things going on in my head right now, but we really do appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening. And if you haven't reviewed us already or left us a rating, please do so in iTunes and the podcast app. That's really what helps us get discovered. And, you know, you gotta spread the word of Unabashed Books Not Really, right? I mean, you can't have people enjoying a television show. Otherwise, please check out thefandamentals.com. Certainly our Winter Hell retrospectives part 1 and 2 are both up now. So we hope you enjoyed those and we will have plenty more in the pipeline. We've also just, you know, got general geeky news, reviews, all that, as I've said pretty much at the beginning of every podcast for a while. And yeah, wow, I really need Julia to bounce off of. This is monologues are not my forte. Should I re-record? No time for that. Okay. I will talk to you guys next time and thank you so much for listening. Goodbye. I miss this too. Ooh, do 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 do.
gonna have to find some kind of sibling rivalry version of Paltarello.
I was trying to think if there's anything else I can adapt from Sweeney Todd, but like, I don't even know at this point.
I think you should adapt the Stark Tale of Extreme Emotional Significance because they played it so many fucking times.
Was that good? Did you like that?
It's really nice.